today's guest, and I'm using that in the plural here because I'll be talking to the mom and dad, but we're talking about a guest that's a family of seven, and what they did was incredible. And I know you all hear me say that a lot. Wow, I have an incredible guest. What this person did was incredible, but no, this is a family, and wait till you hear what they did. They hiked the Appalachian Trail, the Continental Divide Trail, and the Pacific Crest Trail as a family. Their two-year-old was carried on the CDT starting at the age of 8 months and on the PCT starting at the age one, which might be a first. I also think finishing the CDT and the PCT as a family of seven might be a first. Their four-year-old, the only hiker to finish the Appalachian Trail on her own power entirely before turning five. It was in 2020. And she's also the youngest by 3 years to hike the CDT. The youngest triple crowner at age seven. What adds to this story, which really grabbed my attention, is they don't do this for the records or for any attention. They just hike. And I just love hearing that. Stories of, hey, you know, we're not looking to get our patches and our pats on the back and get more likes on YouTube or increase our subscription. Just sounds like they're out there enjoying this as a family. Olin and Danae Nederberg, welcome to Papa Bear Hikes.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So I've probably said way more than I need to because you telling a story is probably much more powerful than the way I could tell it. But I have to say that when I heard about this, I immediately said, these are people I want to talk to on the podcast. This is the type of story I want to share.
I think you just summed it up great. I think that's a wrap.
Yeah. So everybody, thanks for listening.
We can't get better than that because the real story doesn't sound as nice.
Now, as somebody who's done a lot of hiking with their family, with my kids, and I started out hiking as a family with my brothers and my father, it resonated with me.
I'm glad to hear that you did that and that you still enjoy hiking because we want to make sure our kids are still enjoying it when they're
old. Honestly, we just finished and we've lived in a different country for a long time. So we're moving back to America and we're trying to do this everyday life thing. And I think it's way harder than hiking.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, the hiking life is nice and simple.
It really is true.
When I hiked the long trail, I wasn't on there very long and I kind of felt like, yeah, I'm kind of living like a vagabond, right? I will get up and when I want to get up, eat what I want to eat, walk to where I want to walk. That's freedom. That's real freedom.
Yeah, yeah. But with kids, you have to convince them that they want to get up now and eat this and walk there.
It's all a mind game kind of with kids.
Got to mind ninja them into believing it's what they want to do. And then everybody has fun.
No, it's really fun. It was really a special time for us the last 3 years that we did that.
Yeah.
And so when you started hiking, your first hike as a family, and that was when you were a family of six, it was the Appalachian Trail. What was the motivation behind taking this trip as a family?
Well, we had worked in Africa for 9 years at that point. So we ran a rural hospital and we were on call 24/7 and there was just a lot of needs and people were needing us all the time, medical needs. And our kids were kind of, they were homeschooling, but they always didn't get our attention. So we kind of felt like we weren't really giving them as much as they deserved. And so we decided to take a sabbatical. And the year before, we were actually supposed to take it.
2 years before.
Oh, 2 years. Yeah, 2018. We had all lined up that somebody was going to cover us at the hospital. And then that fell through because the person that was covering us was tired of getting sick. I think anyways.
Yeah. He landed in Chad sick and Chad Africa is where we've been. And he was there for 3 months. He tried it. He was a trooper, but he kept getting malaria or giardia or something. And eventually he punched out.
Everybody responds differently to living in a country like that. So malaria is a sickness that you don't feel very good when you have it. Anyway, so we decided to stay and delay our big hiking adventure. And that year we did three or four week-long trips and the kids did pretty great at it. So we were like, okay, maybe we should still think about doing the Appalachian Trail. It was Olin's idea, and I was just kind of going along with it.
I think it was both of us had the poor decision making.
Yeah.
So, we got to that 2020 time, and we felt like we had the good coverage, the good team there, that we could get away. And so, yeah, we just told the kids we're going to take a really long vacation this year, and we're gonna hike some. We're going to try the Appalachian Trail at least for a month. If it's really horrible, we'll stop early.
We didn't think we would do it all. We just thought, yeah, Okay, let's just try it for a month.
And then after a month, the kids,
we're not quitting before the month is up.
and yeah, after a month, everybody wanted to keep going. And I mean, we checked in with them, if not daily, at least weekly. We kind of asked the kids, do you want to keep going? They kept wanting to go, and they kept getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And they had fun.
It is really special. Like, we've been transitioning back to America right now, and so we're going through all of our old pictures and different things, and looking back at how little they were.
Oh, man, a four-year-old is really, like, small.
They were little babies. Like, what were we thinking? But it was so great, but still, like, they were so little.
Yeah.
It sounds almost like the through hike happened organically, right? We're going to go out for a walk. Right? We're going to go out on the Appalachian Trail, see how it goes.
They really
do a
did.
Little bit more.
We definitely weren't ready. We were not ready. We hadn't looked up all the YouTube videos or whatever. We didn't have good internet in Chad.
And our shakedown hike was just starting.
We did not have a shakedown hike. It was, yeah, we were like, okay, let's just start.
but then after a week, then we happened to find some shoestring friend that agreed to slack pack us across the state of Maryland.
Oh, yeah. That was the year that COVID hit, so.
Yeah, it was a lot of just weird moving around, kind of making sure you were going where the COVID numbers were low and where it was legally and technically open and available to be hiking and where it was safe. So it was a lot of moving around that year, hiking here and there and everywhere else. But eventually we did piece together the whole thing in 2020.
Yeah, it was controversial so we weren't trying to be like anti-COVID or rude to our medical friends, because we're both medical professionals. So we weren't trying to be like, oh, we don't want to help you or anything. We weren't trying to disrespect people, but we felt like it was the safest place for us at the time.
Yeah.
When you think about it, it does make sense. You're in the outdoors. You're not in heavily populated areas. Because 2020 was tough. I was supposed to do a section hike in New Hampshire and my plans fell through. And
I mean, people could think of us as, we were being selfish for our family, because people told us that, you know, just there was a lot that wasn't known, and we get that. But we were just trying to do the best we could.
As it turns out, being outdoors, exercising in our group, you know, in our family alone, that turned out to be a pretty good thing. And everybody on the trail, I mean, there weren't many people on the trail, but the ones that were still out were pretty respectful. I mean, when you'd come up, folks would get like 6 feet off the trail to let you go by, or you'd get by and to let other people walk past. So, I mean, it was a good group of people that were still out there on the trail. They were good people. There weren't really rebels or people trying to cause trouble.
But still, then when we get into towns towards the end of our hike, we finished in October that year. It was just so weird to be around people. We were just like, we were down in Georgia finishing, and we were just like, oh, there's too many people. So, like, through hikers were safe, but like day hikers were not safe. So like, we're like, okay, you're day hiker, get away.
Well, like when we did take things seriously. Like when we went up to Northern New England, we actually took a minivan in my in-laws' camper, a pickup truck with a big camper on the back. And we'd go park the cars at opposite ends of a 3 or 4 day section. And we'd hike from one vehicle to the other vehicle and then move the vehicles again. It was a lot of logistics, a lot of leapfrogging, a lot of driving.
We definitely did it non-traditional, which would be fun to go back and do it like the real way, I guess.
Yeah, but it was a lot of work to piece together the whole thing in a single year with COVID raging around.
It just added to the adventure though, right? I mean,
it did.
It wasn't one of these, we took a year and planned it and where we're going to stay every night and where we're going to resupply.
Yeah. Not at all. I mean,
it actually helped us, because this year when we did the PCT, the ice and the snow and everything, you couldn't just go straight northbound. So we were like, oh, let's just do it how we did on the AT. We can just, you know, drive around and do different segments of it. and, piece it together in 1 year.
Yeah, and the PCT was a bit of a zoo this year with all the snow they had in the Sierras. And now I guess wildfires are becoming kind of normal out there every year. But just we were so flexible after kind of moving around all over the AT that it was like, okay, well, there's snow here, so let's move around over there. And eventually when that melts, we'll come back. And it was, again, kind of jumping all over the place, but eventually getting the whole thing done.
And I think that's the main thing with when you're with kids or a weird year hiking is the flexibility, is that you have to have it or otherwise you might as well quit.
Yeah. If you're rigid, it's not going to be fun for the kids. And if it's not fun for the kids, it's not fun for you either.
We'll be back after a quick break.
You ever think about what might be in the water you're drinking every time you fill up your water bottles while you're in the outdoors? I try not to, and I really don't, because I use Sawyer water filters. Sawyer filter technology, because of their high standards, every filter is individually tested 3 times through the process. I've been using their permethrin product for years now to protect me from, well, quite frankly, ticks, and the picaridin to keep the flies at bay. Don't let bad water, insects, or a tick bite cut your trip short or even ruin it. Use Sawyer products. Go to your local outdoor retailer and ask for Sawyer products, whether it's a water filter, insect repellent, they're likely to have it. You can also go to Sawyer's website and read more about these incredible high quality products that they offer those of us who enjoy the outdoors.
Yeah, I know that from my own experience. And as far as the PCT goes, I think flexibility is becoming the new normal when you hike the PCT, is having plans A, B, and C in place. You know, if I get here and there's a wildfire or there's too much snow, well, how am I getting up there so I can hike in the other direction and connect the dots?
Yeah, we didn't know a whole bunch about the PCT until this year, but that's exactly what everybody's been telling us, is that is the new normal, which is a bummer because out there they have that a pretty rigorous permit system. Luckily, I saw the writing on the wall in April or March and asked for a flip-flop permit, so we wouldn't have the straight northbound permit. But some of the people with northbound permits, when they would jump around, they were kind of getting grilled and asked questions about why they were where they were at the time they were, and they kind of explained, you know, snow here and wildfires there. And but we were, again, fortunate that we had the more flexible permit.
Do either of you have any backpacking experience or had any backpacking experience prior to this?
Very little.
I mean, I went a little bit when I was a kid with my, I think I went when I was 6, I went to Colorado with my parents, but my brother, I think, carried my backpack half the way. And then in our youth groups in church, we went a couple of times, but you know, we wore jeans and carried like 5 outfits and nothing was done right. Right, whatever right is.
Ultralight. In high school I could get a semester's worth of PE credit if we went backpacking for a week with the school. So I signed up for that. And my buddy and I, my best friend and I, we decided we would either do it ultra heavy and bring everything or ultra light and take nothing. And we were broke, so we went with the ultra light option and took nothing. We like shared a 12-pound pack between the two of us for a week. And you know, plus food on top of that. And we like curl up in a tarp at night. We'd crunch on dry ramen like no stove. We didn't know about cold soaking, so we just crunched on dry food.
Oh, boy.
but it was fun.
When we were dating, actually, I guess we were dating in medical school, we went to Joshua Tree, and Olin, I had worked all night, and Olin picked me up, and he was like, we're going to the high point of Joshua Tree. And we just had this little GPS, not like the fancy stuff right now. It's like just a handheld little GPS device that you went
those old Garmin ones. Yeah.
Yeah. It says it's like 3.6 miles that way. And that's
so
all
we're
that you
just
get
like,
is an arrow.
We know we can go that way. So it was just kind of fun, adventurous to try and go that way and figure out where the high point was. And we camped out overnight, and
she was hooked and married me right away.
We didn't do much backpacking after that.
So yeah, that wasn't the trip where you said, okay, let's get married, have 7 kids and become triple crowners.
Yeah, no. she would have said no.
But I think I don't know if we went anymore after that, did we?
Yeah, we did the in the Canadian Rockies. We spent a week up in the Canadian
after
Rockies.
We were married. And I remember we had gone in like 4 miles in the Canadian Rockies, and I only had a week of vacation, and so we flew up there, and the first day in, you know, I carried too much, and then it was like 4 miles, and I was like, okay, I'm ready to camp. Like, and he's like, okay, like being the loving husband that he was. And then like the next day, like 4 more miles, barely any miles. And then like the last day, we'd been in like five days or something.
We'd hiked in 14 miles eventually after.
And like, I was so ready for a shower. I was like, okay, time to get to the hotel. We hiked out like the whole mileage.
The whole 4 days we had done getting in, we hiked out in one day.
Anyways, yeah.
The shower motivates this one pretty strongly.
So, Owen, let me ask you this. Reflecting back on that early, those early days of your marriage and your relationship, you think, wow, I never would have thought that young woman would have ever been able to through hike for even 5 days, never mind become a triple crowner.
I mean, she's strong. It's just whether or not she can tolerate the hygiene issues that come with triple crowning.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, and this isn't a woman type of thing. There's men that are like that too. I don't want to, you know, the question I get all the time, well, you know, what do you do for showering and laundry when you're out there for 4 or 5 days at a time?
But in reality, he's the one that will jump in the cold Alpine lake. And I'm the one that's like, that is way too cold. I'm waiting for a shower.
I want the hot water.
Yeah.
Yeah, you find your ways to make the hot it work.
No, I'm with you on that, Danae. I'll take my bandana and clean up, but I want a hot shower.
No, but him and the kids, they are constantly like, when we were in the winds in
Wyoming.
Yeah, on the CDT, we were like, let's jump in a cold lake every day. I thought that I'd be a cool mom if I could like convince all the kids to jump in, but then they all did it. So then I had to follow them. It was so cold. I forced myself to do it, but I hate cold water.
You've been in a lot of lakes where there's like snow drifts right on the edge of the lake.
Yeah, and the kids are like right jumping in with him like it's nothing. They're messed up.
Kids don't have any fear. They're not thinking about that. They're just saying, wow, that looks like fun.
Yeah. Hype them up enough. Anything is fun.
Now with the planning, you said, you know, one of the first challenges was, you know, as you're not just doctors here in the United States in a hospital that you report to every day or a medical practice, the two of you travel the world. So your first obstacle was, you know, the whole planning of getting the time off and getting back here to the States and doing that. And that was the first stress you had, right? So beyond that, you said you didn't do a whole lot of planning, didn't go through the whole YouTube thing that now everybody has to watch a million YouTubes, they feel to prepare.
Mm-hmm.
You took an approach, and you know, and this is something that, do you want to do the analysis by paralysis approach to it, or just say, hey, you know what, I have enough confidence in myself, we're going to do this?
You know, I said we didn't do planning, but this one, Olin, this one I'm pointing to, if you can't see me pointing, he's actually a big planner. I'm not. And so we had it planned out for 2018. And so he got the little book. What is that little book that has all of the
ultralight?
The data book. So he had he has like a million spreadsheets. So he had the weather in each state planned out and like from the last however many years. We knew like if it was going to rain more likely in these states and less. And I don't know. There was a lot of planning. It just wasn't done by me.
So what we decided on the AT is we did a couple day hikes in Pennsylvania in February, and then March 17, 13, what day?
March 17.
March 17, yeah. 13, whatever it was. Man. We started in Front Royal, Virginia. So I figured you're coming out of the Shenandoah Mountains. It's like lower elevation, so less likely to have snow and really sketchy weather. And we're just going to bring everything. Like, we're going to make sure the kids are warm, dry, well-fed, well-slept. And we're just going to go as many miles as we can, keeping them happy and engaged and entertained. And so I carried everything, man. We carried like...
Yeah, but that was just stupid.
3 hammocks, a big old 4-season tent, like 2 bivy sacks. We had sleeping pads for everybody, sleeping quilts for everybody.
It's because we didn't do a hike prior to, like when we first got back from Africa. We just kind of started.
And carried like 13 liters of water, and then realize that there's water everywhere on the AT. so after a week, we kind of reassessed and changed our equipment quite a bit. We lost 50 pounds, right?
Well, because
we lost 50 pounds of stuff after a week.
I mean, we knew we didn't need that many tents. It's just you hadn't decided which ones you were bringing. So
yeah,
We were just deciding.
Our shakedown was 80 miles. It was a week and a half on the AT.
But yeah, the planning you were talking about. So the AT, we were talking about the planning, but on the PCT too, this is how he got his name spreadsheet. He just had like all the spreadsheets and I'm like, what is that even? And he's like, oh, this is the precipitation from, you know, this year and whatever. Mm-hmm. It's a lot. You don't actually have to do all that. It's just,
no. No, but I'll say this in all his defense is that for those of us who like to plan as part of the fun, you know, I'm of that school that it gets me through the winter, right? When I could start spreading out the information and, you know, I'll even use index cards sometimes. So I'm writing the information down, right? Because, you know, as an educator, you know, you part of the learning process, you know, read, write it down, yeah. You know, read it again. Yeah, planning could be as much.
And then you have to be willing to throw that out the window if necessary.
Yeah, that's the thing. Don't let that be what stops you. Don't like be in a situation where, oh my goodness, it's supposed to be sunny today and it's raining. What am I going to do?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yep.
Yeah.
On these shakedown hikes or in this first 18-mile hike, you know, you were going through your gear. Were you observing how the children were responding on that hike as well, saying, okay, well, this one can handle that, or this one maybe this is their strength or weakness?
Yeah, so actually in that first week, we got to the roller coaster in Virginia, which is, 14 hills and 11 miles or something like that. And so the four-year-old had a little backpack, but we had kind of clipped it to the back of Danae's pack. And we got to the bottom of one of those on the roller coaster and she just sat down and started crying. And we thought, okay, well, this is it. That was fun. Kids aren't enjoying this. We're done.
No, we thought we were maybe pushing her too hard.
Got to back off. So we asked her kind of, what's wrong? Are you tired? Are you hurting? Are you sore? Are you hungry? Are you thirsty? Do you want to take a nap? Like, what's going on? And eventually we finally got out of her that she was crying because mommy had taken her backpack and she wanted to carry her own backpack. And Danae's like, you're too small, it's too heavy, the hills are too big, just another day,
you're gonna get tired later.
And she kept crying, so I was like, forget it. So I just unclipped the backpack, stuck it on her shoulders, I said, go. And the little girl just ran up the mountain, and we'd go chugging off after her, couldn't quite catch her, and she'd be around a corner, we'd come around the corner and she'd be sitting on a log or a rock just laughing at us, and then take off again as soon as she saw us. And it took a few hills before we finally caught up to her and wore her down. But that was the first day that we kind of played with her name, maybe being the Beast, her trail name. She was tough, but it is very much so being in tune with the kids. You have to always be in tune with where they're at.
And they all are different and they all respond differently. So our oldest was 11 when we started the AT, and he was kind of the only one that was like not really into it. And I think because he was a little bit older, he's starting to get his own independence a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we were like, it's so cool, it's going to be so fun. And he's like, whatever. And then the rest of them, Zane was, how old was Zane? It would have been eight
when he started. Eight,
and then Addison would have been six. But they all responded differently. And so you have to, you know, look at each of them and make it. And sometimes most of them would have a good day. And then one of them was like a little off. So you had to figure out why they were, you know, not having a good day.
Nobody really had bad days. They'd have bad hours maybe, but not really full bad days.
Yeah.
But really what kids seem to want, at least what our kids want to, and this is probably true for most kids, is they really want their parents' attention. And right now people are so distracted by work, by phones, by bills, by whatever, by, you know, fitness goals, by whatever is their distraction, that the kids aren't getting their attention. So when we started really giving our kids our attention, I think they really started thriving and they got really into it. I mean, you're singing songs with them, you're playing 20 questions or I Spy or building an imaginary house or counting salamanders or whatever it is you're doing that day, that hour. If you're doing that and engage with them, the kids will just, they'll walk forever just because they're distracted. I mean, they have their parents' attention and they'll just go, go, go.
There was this article that came out this year on CNN talking about us doing the hikes and stuff, and I mistakenly looked at the comments that people write, that people respond to.
Don't do that.
It was right before we were doing the Sierra on the PCT, and like just so much judgment, like, oh, I bet they're forcing their kids, blah 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 blah. And
yeah,
And I was just like, you don't know, like they're not sitting on watching TV. They're not on their iPods, you know, like it's actually healthy for them.
Or they're threatening their kids to smile for the picture and the kids are back and moping right afterwards. We don't want
them to resent us when they're older. So, yeah.
Nah, and that's what happens. And I've seen that, yeah, they don't want to be out there. And, you know, that's true for everything, you know, whether you're forcing your kid to participate in a sport or an extracurricular activity, eventually they're just going to resent it. I mean, that's, you know, that's a fact. And for you, the challenge was, you know, that's a big age group. An 11-year-old's interest is just, it's going to be a lot different than the 4-year-old. So that alone has to.
But, you know, by the end of that month, we said we were going to do it for the month and then reassess. And the end of that month, we asked every one of them and they all wanted to keep going.
Yeah.
And throughout the other hikes too, we've, you know, randomly ask them, like, does everyone want to keep hiking or is it too challenging or whatever? And, you know,
they just want to keep going. And so when we got to like the last week or so on the Appalachian Trail, they were like, well, what are we going to do next? So I got out like some articles on the CDT and the PCT that were kind of comparing the two. Like they were kind of jokey articles, like the PCT guy is joking about how the CDT is trash and the CDT guy is joking about how the PCT is trash. And so we're reading through these articles and the kids are starting to like kind of excited, kind of nervous. These are kind of big trails, big weather, big miles.
Yeah, much harder.
Harder and, well, not as much up and down as the AT, but every trail has its own challenges. But they were getting kind of excited about the CDT, but then this one decided to get knocked up.
On her own, there was no help with that.
It was immaculate. Totally. It was that time of year.
We finished the AT pregnant.
And yeah, we didn't know.
I was a little bit older, so I was just like, what? Really?
A little bit older.
Yeah,
it was a geriatric pregnancy.
I was 41 and had her at 42. So I was just like, okay, well. So we didn't hike the CDT the next year. We waited another year.
Yeah. And again, it was kind of, are the kids still into it or not? Or what do they want to do? And they still wanted to do it.
And so then the whole baby thing, that's a whole nother. We had never backpacked with a baby. So that brought its own challenges and fun.
Yeah. It definitely changed the dynamic a lot. Instead of being able to kind of pay attention to everybody equally, definitely the baby got more than her share of the attention. But that's
life in general anyways. I mean, whether you're at home or outside,
yeah,
the baby always gets the attention.
Right?
Yeah.
We're both babies in our family, incidentally. There's a good reason why two babies aren't supposed to marry each other. They become irresponsible parents of too many children.
Yeah. I'm a middle child, which probably explains why I have a podcast and I'm always starving for attention. I just think it's so cool though that your kids were in this enough to want to go out and do more trails. So let me ask, do you think it was because of the approach you took with, you didn't start off by saying we're going to hike from Springer Mountain to Katahdin in 2100 miles. It just seems like you had just kind of a, you know, little hike and look, when you guys are finished, when you're ready to call it quits, we'll call it quits. And do you think that played into it where it sounds like maybe they even had a little bit of control over the hike.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, and they did have some control over it, but we made it very not intimidating. We're just going to go out hiking. We're going to go out. We're going to put on backpacks. We're going to sleep in tents. And, you know, we had done a little bit the year before and a bit more 2 years before. So they weren't unfamiliar with what backpacking was, but we said, we're going to do it. And if we like it, we're going to do it some more and keep doing it. And we've got the time off work. So
I think that's a lot of people though, with or without kids, like one of the biggest things is like starting, you know. Like once you start and you keep going, you're like, oh, it's just this, like 100 million times over and over again.
Well, and I mean,
part of it is just starting.
But a 4 and a 6-year-old, you know, they couldn't, and probably the 8-year-old as well, they couldn't really wrap their brains around what 2,200 miles is, or backpacking for, it ended up being 7 months, backpacking for 7 months straight. I mean, they just wouldn't be able to process.
But I do remember when COVID kind of started shutting things down and we were going to stay at this one Blackburn Trail Center.
You're close, but
I can't remember exactly. That was a long time ago.
Bear selling, I don't know, north of Shenandoah.
We were going to stay at this little place, and then it was closed. So we were like, oh, 3 more miles.
Oh,
we had done 8 miles, and we were like, 3 more miles. Can we do 3 more miles? Because we didn't want to push the kids too much. And then we asked all the kids and they were like, yeah, let's do it. And so we got to the next place we were going to stay, which was 11 miles.
11.8.
And that was a big day. We had been gone for like a week and a half. That
was like six. No, it was like 6 days in.
Okay. And at that point we were like, and he had said the average needed to be 10 miles an hour or 10 miles per day. So we were like, oh, we did 11 miles. Yes.
Wow.
And we finished before dark. So we had all the kids that night were practicing all, their katahdin poses. We What's the like pose you're going to strike on top of katahdin?
It was very exciting. The world was falling around us. And
With COVID. Yeah.
Yeah. We were like, well, maybe.
Yeah. It was a crazy year.
But I think, little by little with the kids is definitely the way to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's got to be fun. And you got to be really tuned in to what they're enjoying. And, you know, we spent hours and hours and hours and days singing like the Frozen soundtrack because the girls were really into Frozen or VeggieTales.
We were just hiking. When we started the PCT, we had a couple of friends that lived in Southern California and they brought their 4-year-old. He's 4, right?
Oh, yeah.
They did a small overnighter with us or two nights with us. And we just did short miles when we first started because we were hanging out with a few people. And he was 4 and we were like, wow, that was how old Juniper was when she did the AT. And the way his dad engaged him and like just every second you had to like be talking and imagination this game and imagination that game. We were like, that's what we did. Oh my goodness, how exhausting. Like, I mean, it's just really engaging their mind so that, you know, they're having fun. But 7 was a lot easier than 4.
It was a lot easier. She probably would have preferred to have been more engaged with us than we were. But we again, the baby was kind of distracted.
We kind of let it go a little more this year.
But, we did.
But that was what was great with having 3 other siblings to hang out with Juniper is that.
Yeah, they did it together as a team. And I mean, they really grew together and they grew individually. They grew in responsibilities to the point where they were seeking out more gear to carry to put in their packs to make their packs heavier. They were trying to make fires, you know, where fires were reasonable, harder out west. But and they were wanting to set up the tents and they were wanting to put up the bear hang and they were taking on responsibilities that was really pleasing to see as a parent.
We look at these other families that have like, you know, maybe one child and they did the through hike with them and we're like, wow, that would be so hard. They don't have each other to like talk to and you have to talk to them every second, which we love as a family, but
we don't love every second.
It's exhausting. Kids, even quiet kids, they talk a lot.
Yeah.
And when you're out in the middle of nowhere, they talk even more.
No, it was definitely easier that there was more than one kid in the family.
Yeah.
So we didn't have to be their sole entertainment.
Yeah. Cause I know I only have 3 and all 3 of them are different. And you know, what was needed to do what I needed to do to keep each one motivated was a little different from one to the next.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And definitely in different phases in their lives are different too.
Now you talked about, you know, they were sharing in a responsibility. Do you think that an experience like this helps kids grow? Because, you know, let's face it, sitting at home, it's easy for kids to just get comfortable with, yeah, I mean, I have these comforts here and in some households, you know, somebody will clean up after me. Somebody's going to make my food and, you know, I'll come home from school or, you know, and everything will be fine. Do you think this experience maybe taught them some life lessons that will be useful when it comes to responsibilities?
I hope so. Our kids have had a very different upbringing. I mean, they've been raised in Chad, Africa, which is generally one of the poorest and least developed countries in the world. So, you know, the house they grew up in is a house that would be condemned anywhere in America as being just an unsafe house where electricity and running water are not guaranteed. And, you know, it's 120 outside and 95 inside. And,
like they're used to making toys out of old bicycle tire rubber, you know, the stuff like they're used to kind of
or baling wire,
improvising
sticks and mud and clay. And, you know, they're very semi-feral children at baseline before we ever started hiking. But yeah, I think they've gotten to learn things that they wouldn't learn otherwise. And, we weren't able to continue our more traditional homeschooling curriculum out on the trail. It's just, you know, you can't haul around a whole bunch of books or anything. So we could do spelling and math and whatever, but a lot of nature and there's a lot of social. I mean, the trail, like I think you mentioned, the trail is the great equalizer. And so people are out there and they're learning to converse and get along and commune with folks of different ages, different races. You know, it's predominantly Caucasian out there, but it is getting more and more diverse. People of different socioeconomic classes, people from different religions, people of different political persuasions. And the kids are really learning that folks are just folks. They're just out there carrying the same packs and the same tents and sleeping in the same spots and hiking the same miles and craving the same foods. And I hope that's one of the major things that they take away from this, is that people are people, and people are by and large good. I mean, we've been the recipients of so much goodwill out there on the trail. Some bad will, but most far and away goodwill. And people are good. People are the same. And then the other thing I want the kids to take away is that they can do hard things. I mean, the kids have all hiked now, 8,000 miles, over 7,000 miles. And those are hard things. Those are unique things, different things. And I hope my kids can take away from this that they are unique and they are capable. They can overcome challenges. If they can remember that, and they can remember that people are good, I think that's some good takeaways for them.
Now, I've talked to adults that have through hiked, and they tell me when they're finished with their hike, this mentality develops that, hey, I can do anything. I hiked 2,200 miles. I hiked from the Mexican border to the Canadian border. They go to work and it's like, no, I can do this. This isn't the hardest thing I've ever had to do.
Yeah. We took the kids out snowboarding and skiing on a little itty bitty bunny hill Friday night. And there were moments where they were kind of breaking down, a little tearful. This is frustrating. Like, I keep falling off the snowboard, whatever. And I'd be like, dude, you just hiked like 8,000 miles. You're like going 40 yards down a little bunny slope. It's hard, but you can do hard. Just stick with it for a little bit. And then by the end of the night, they all thought that they were ready for the Olympics. They're not. They just think they are.
Right.
Yeah.
But they've developed that mentality that, you know, if I put my mind to it, yeah, I know from experience, if I put my mind to something, I can do it.
Today, yeah. Addison was saying, what was she saying? That she was an expert or something.
She had mastered snowboarding.
I've mastered it. I'm like, in one day? Really? You're a master? I think we've raised a little too confident of a kid
here. I went down the slope beside you. Every stop was just fall down. That's your that's how you stop.
But you know what? She's confident. So there's that.
She is. She's a strong 60-pound 8-year-old.
She's 10.
10-year-old. The other one's 8. Whichever. Can't keep them all straight.
Oh.
Yeah, I guess in a 10-year-old world, that's mastering it. You know, that's
right.
That's good. That's great. Now, but 7 people. It's a lot of mouths to feed while you're out there on the trail. What was your process or your approach with food?
So there was another spreadsheet that was for food, and we had essentially 2 columns. One was calories per gram, and the other one was price per gram. Well, and I guess price per calories. So we had to do it on the cheap. And then we had to do it as light as possible. So a lot of nuts, a lot of oils.
It kind of depended on which trail and how tired we were of the previous snack food trail.
How far to the next resupply, too. If it's like an 8-day carry, then we really have to maximize everything.
But even though we're physicians, we're not rich American physicians, so we were on a budget. And
yeah, we haven't been making American salad.
So we were trying to do, you know, whatever is cheapest and lightest and most calories, but the kids are so confused now because they're like used to like eating the most calories, and we're like, no, you don't do that when you stop hiking.
We stop hiking, but we still eat like we're hiking, and that's a problem.
So I'm vegetarian, so we tried to find, you know, vegetarian foods, which isn't always easy, but usually Walmart does pretty well with some meals.
It's harder to find them, but Walmart was stocking like a vegan ramen that was like 17 cents a pack, and we ate a lot of that.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
And peanut butter is really good to add into the ramen.
A lot of olive oil.
Yeah. We just got really tired of all this sweet snack bars. I think a lot of people who hike long distances do.
Yeah.
But we've
I think our bodies change, right? Our bodies, you know, tell us what we need, right? So at some point, it's stop putting Pop-Tarts in me and
oh, no,
give me some protein or give me...
You were pretty sick of Pop-Tarts.
I mean, but we still ate them, though.
We didn't have a
rule. Kids, I don't think kids get sick of Pop-Tarts.
Yeah. No, they don't. If we wanted a fast morning, we're like, okay, Pop-Tarts.
We didn't have a rule that we would never walk by ice cream without stopping. So if there was ever ice cream...
Yeah, I have that same rule.
If the store was open and the kids called us out, we would always stop.
The problem with the baby is that, you know, we finished when she was a little over two and she wasn't hiking. So she wasn't burning the calories like we were. So we were eating all this sugar and just burning the calories. It didn't really matter. And then, you know, we're like, why is she getting sick all the time? Because she's eating sugar all the time. Yeah. So it's hard to cram sugar down your face and then not give it to the baby. Yeah. She kind of screams at that.
Half of her calories were goldfish.
Yeah. But it is challenging. And I think, but our kids are not picky. So, I mean,
no, they're not picky eaters. They never have been.
It wasn't too hard, but it did require a little thinking, but
well, and it was heavy.
Yeah. So
the nice thing is if you get to carry the pack with the food, you get lighter every day.
So on the AT, a lot of our hike, probably half of our hike was, it's called slack packing for people right. that haven't heard that. It's the day hiking. So we hiked in between the cars.
A lot of driving.
It was like the second half of our hike. And then the CDT, Olin, so we had the baby that I carried on the CDT and Olin carried the food and a lot of the water on our long desert water carries. So his pack was 80, 90 pounds. And that was us being ultralight. We had gotten rid of all, we were like CDT, it's serious. We're doing ultralight. We got nice light tents. Everything was lightweight, but then we had dead weight. He was a baby. So she kind of added 18 pounds. And then just with the food, it was just a lot of food. And our kids were smaller then, so they couldn't really carry as much. But by the end of the CDT, Lyle, our now 14, how old was he when he finished? 12?
He was 13. 13
when he finished the CDT. He like came into his own and he started carrying more weight. And I was like, he's passing me up.
I still had 75 pounds on our last section on the CDT.
And then on the PCT, Lyle just, he wanted to carry mule. Weight. He was like out to prove himself. And I'm like, yes, this is awesome.
He was really the one that made the PCT possible with his growth spurt.
He made it.
I mean, there were times when we had him up pretty close to about 35 pounds. He was often over 30 pounds on the PCT, and that's a pretty solid pack for a 14-year-old. Yeah,
but
we called him our mule.
And trail life, you know, you hike the Appalachian Trail, and I'm going to guess it rained a couple of times on the Appalachian Trail.
A lot.
If I could redo that, we carried umbrellas on the CDT.
And the PCT.
And we did not think to carry umbrellas on the AT. And
the PCT, we actually didn't bring, we didn't own, didn't carry any rain gear. We just had umbrellas.
We had wind jackets.
And wind jackets.
And umbrellas. And, but on the, if we could go back and do the AT with
I want to go try the AT with an umbrella. I think it'd be a game changer.
I mean, there was a lot of trees, but I think it's big enough trail where you could do it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was so nice not being drenched when it rained.
I hate rain gear. I mean, either you sweat and get wet or eventually it wets out in a heavy rain. Just hated it. But I mean, we did it a bunch. We had like, what, four days straight in Maine.
We were up in Maine and the little four-year-old, the river was up past her knees, like the trail. The trail was the river. We were like, yeah, this is part of the adventure.
Yeah, we're trying to convince her that it's awesome, even though it's like freezing rain.
I mean,
she loved it.
Thought it was awesome.
Yeah, she thought it was cool. We're like, all right, whatever. Brainwashed. So,
yeah, the kids kept their spirits up even in the rain. That's great to hear because that's tough. For adults, that's tough. I think it's tougher for adults than for kids.
There was a day in Tennessee. I remember.
Oh, yeah.
All of our stuff was soaked. Like, we tried to hang it up so it would dry overnight. And then we just slept in a cloud and stuff was wetter in the morning than it was at
night. The day before, we had like 12 miles, I think. And the first 10 miles, they were jumping in the mud puddles. And we're like, you guys, you're not going to like this at the end of the day. They were like, oh, it's so fun. And then at the end of the day, it was like two more miles. And they were like,
this is not fun.
We're not yet to our place. And then, yeah,
Well, the next day was tough. The next day, actually, we called the shuttle to pick us up at a road crossing a few miles earlier than we planned. It was cold. That was a lot of frozen songs and discussions and just talking nonstop to take their mind off the fact
that we didn't leave camp that day until like 1 p.m. because we were trying to just get going.
Yeah. It required a lot of hugs.
You made it through Vermud with your 4-year-old. So I'm guessing she didn't fall into any of those notorious Vermont mud puddles up there.
We ended up in Vermont it was late July. So it had dried out a little bit by then. It wasn't quite as bad as when folks are going through in June or early July. There was some mud.
But you're so right. Bad. Like the time of year, the weather, you know, whatever it happened to be can really impact how your hike is different from day to day. So if you did a through hike, you know, in a different time of year or a different year, even it could be completely different as far as your mindset goes.
I heard some hike through Virginia and they like didn't have any rain, like the whole state of Virginia. Like, wow, that's crazy.
And even in 1 year, like you said, there could be a difference. In 2017, I was southbounding on the Long Trail, and there was one puddle where my oldest son, he's like 5'10 and a half, he's a big guy. He stepped in and pulled his leg out and says, "I don't know how deep that is, Dad. I didn't hit the bottom." He was like, maybe a little bit below his knee. I don't know how serious he was. I didn't hit the bottom. But then 2 weeks later, I went down to Massachusetts and I was going to hike up to Killington, and it was dry. You would have never thought it was any rain at all. Yeah.
I remember some of the mud bogs in like southern Maine, I think it was, or northern New Hampshire. I think some of the kids would sometimes step off the boardwalk, and I was always amazed that nobody lost his shoe up in those bogs. They can just suck the shoe right off.
Shoe suckers, they call them up there.
Yeah.
But we really loved the AT, even after the CDT. We did a modified CDT, so we didn't do the red line on the CDT, but
we did the easier path.
After the CDT and the PCT, the AT, it still has me. Like,
people ask what's the favorite trail, and I don't know, it's so hard. It's like, which of your kids do you like more? I mean, that one's easy, but which trail do you like best? That's a hard one. I mean, we love the AT so much, and I don't know if it was just kind of, it was that point in our life, the four kids at that age, and we were really engaged all the time. We didn't have the baby distracting us, or maybe we just love the green tunnel.
I love the lush green deciduous trees. Like, we didn't have that on the CDT or the PCT. So I would love to go back and...
I don't know. It's true, though, the trails out west are so big and grand and expansive and... I don't know. Every trail has its pros and its cons. Yeah. No cons, just pros.
Some
cons.
I grew up in the Northeast, so the green tunnel thing is something I grew up with. But 2022, I hiked the Tahoe Rim Trail, and what an experience for me, right?
Yeah. Going out,
the Desolation Wilderness.
Oh, so beautiful.
Aloha Lake, right?
Yes.
We camped out there. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
When we were there, the water was low. I'd love to go back when the water's high. And just see.
We had done the Sierra, and then we went up to do Northern California because we hadn't done Northern California yet. And I was just like, oh, I just thought after the Sierra, they would just get out the rest of the miles, you know, like we're almost done. And then Northern California, I was like, Desolation Wilderness. I was like, oh, it just keeps coming, like the views.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's so pretty, so pretty. I mean, if nobody has experienced that, like, you should go there because it's pretty accessible to a road.
And then you hike out.
We'd stayed in South Tahoe and then came out. And when we got to that section approaching Echo Lake, then all of a sudden everything seemed to change. And at every turn, there was something new, and it was, it was great. Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is beautiful.
Actually, speaking of kind of garbage weather days, just north of Desolation, we were hiking out of Donner Pass on like the first snow September.
It snowed on us.
I don't remember what day it was, but it was snowing on us at Donner Pass. And we're like, oh, this is a bad omen. It was blowing and cold, and we were doing like, it's a big day.
We were slack packing it.
It was slack packing, but it was a pretty big day.
Like almost 30, 27. I think it was 20 or 22. It was a big day.
We were That's a big day for us, not for everybody. That's a big day for us. Yeah, but it was like sideways. It was like snow blowing uphill into us.
I mean, we had all the jokes of it's Dawn. So Donner Pass is where a party in the late 1800s or 1900s. I don't remember.
Just say it with 18.
Sometime in the past, the settlers, a lot of them died, so they had to cannibalize each other. And so we were just making all the jokes, you know, oh, it's snowing, like who we're going to eat first. And then we're like, I hope, you know, we need to not joke so much because you could get stranded out here.
At the beginning of the day, we're walking through and it's like kind of forested as you're hiking south out of Donner Pass. And the snowflakes are like gently falling. And I think it was Danae and like Addison, a couple of people were like, it's so magical.
Yeah, it was magical.
Just wait a few hours.
It really was. Actually, we did have our backpacks on because we were hiking to that condo.
Yeah. And then the wind picked up and the wind started just blowing the snow up the mountain at us and it became a lot less magical.
It was really wet, but we were staying, somebody let us use their condo at a ski resort there and you had to hike like 2 miles off the trail to get down to it. But we were at the top of the Black Diamond slopes and we were like, how do we get down?
Yeah.
But we knew we were going to get dry that night. So it was kind of,
there was a hot shower and good food waiting.
But it was still so beautiful, the views there.
Yeah, I like hiking in the snow. It's it's fun. I enjoy it.
You're from upstate New York.
Yeah. Yes. We see a lot of snow.
I think that we were very lightweight on the PCT. So I think if we would have been hiking a lot in the snow, we would have had to up our cold weather gear.
Well, we kind of on both the CDT and the PCT, we kind of made a decision that we weren't going to go anywhere that required like ice axes, micro spikes, you know, crampons, none of that. We weren't going to take our poor little kids that were raised in Africa, not really used to the cold, into any of those conditions. We had to move around a bunch to do that. We did eventually hike all of it, but it required skipping some spots and coming back later when they had melted out.
We didn't have great snow gear.
We're not ready for winter camping just yet.
So we were like taking the umbrellas and shielding ourselves
from the blowing snow.
Yeah, the baby was warm. Don't worry. She had her nice puffy on and
she's in her climate controlled little backpack kitty carrier.
Now, the baby, that's a whole nother, I'll say, weight concern because it's not just the weight of the baby, but you have the diapers to deal with and all that.
So we actually, there's something called elimination communication. It's basically potty training your kid. And where we lived in Chad, people do it when the baby is 2 weeks old and you potty train your child. It's more like potty training the parents. But so we started Piper when she was 6 months old, put her on a toilet. And we were very motivated because we started the CDT when she was 8 months old. So every time we'd stop, we'd sit her on her little toilet. So we didn't actually have to worry too much about the diapers. I think on the whole CDT, we had
five poopy
diapers. This is TMI, but since we're talking about it, we had five poopy diapers. And then like
most nights, she probably wet a diaper overnight.
Yeah, she wet her diapers overnight, but if
she probably had about the same number of
poopy diapers. So it was usually just wet diapers that I had to wash out. And then we dry them on our pack. So I only had, I think I had like 8 liners and 2 covers that I had to worry about. So it really wasn't that much heavier. It was certainly lighter than if a child would have been using their disposable diapers all the
time. Bummer when you have like these big sheets of cotton diaper liners soaked with pee, like blowing off the back of your backpack pinned to the top. And you just smell like urine every time you walk by somebody.
He loved it.
Yeah. And then we put her on a diet so that she wouldn't be heavy since we had to carry her.
That's not true. she pretty much ate whatever we ate, but she also
she
had
pretty
her,
much ate
she pretty goldfish
much lived all day long
goldfish
and
all the time.
Breastfed all night long.
Yeah, that was a whole nother thing. Because she lived in a tent with us, I couldn't really train her to sleep. I didn't do a good job sleep training her like our other kids. So we're like, this is our fifth kid and we're failing at sleep training because she was constantly sleeping next to me. So if she woke up, I didn't want other campers to, you know, be mad at us. So I'd breastfeed her and then, you know, she'd wake up again and I'd breastfeed her again. And I was quite tired of it by the end.
By the end, she could say, no, I want the other one.
Yeah. Anyways.
Now, when you got into camp or came across to other people and they saw you hiking as a family, what kind of reactions were you getting from people out there?
A lot of people either it didn't register that that's a baby in the backpack.
They all thought we were day hiking.
Or they'd assume that we were day hiking.
Which is fine. But I'd be like, look at our little tags. We got the PCT through hiking tag. I mean, it doesn't matter, but like you want to connect with people. So they're like talking about their through hike and you're like, oh yeah, us too. And they're like, yeah, whatever.
So, I mean, I'm sure there were a lot of non-hikers that had maybe some negative things to say. And I'm sure there were some hikers with negative things to say, but nobody ever said it to us. So we would have friends that would be like, oh, so-and-so said this or so-and-so said that. And we're like, whatever, that's fine. Like if they want to come and talk to us, that's great. Whatever. But we had a lot of people that hiked really extensive distances with us, and they became trail family. They became our tramily, and we're still in touch, and they've been just wonderful people to the kids. But we know that not everybody's out there. I mean, there's a lot of kind of young 20s, or there's a lot of people out there that really have no interest in being around kids, and that's fine. I totally get that. I respect that. So anytime we came up on a campsite, unless somebody invited us to come stay with them, I mean, the kids knew to just put their heads down and walk on, and we would camp by ourselves somewhere. If somebody invited us, great, we'll come camp with somebody if they invite us to. But otherwise, we want to leave people in their peace.
Because I would think it's kind of cool. Like, if I came across you guys while I was out there hiking.
Well, that's because you have kids. Most people out there didn't have kids.
No, but a lot of people out there, even without kids, they'd stop and want to ask us a lot of questions. And they'd say, oh, look, I guess I can do this someday when I have kids. And
but, you know, nowadays, just even in the last three or four or five years, there's more through hiking families.
Oh, there's a lot more.
Like this year on the PCT, we got to know another through hiking family that have two kids that were our kids' age. So and we got to camp with them a couple of nights. Well, and it was really fun.
We did a 2-night across Oregon with them. Mm-hmm. And then we saw them again in Colorado and California.
And then there's other people. There was a mom with her 15 kids that hiked the AT this year. And who else? There's
Strawbridge, the Strawbridge family.
There's lots of legends out there that it's kind of fun to connect with, even just on social media.
Buddy Backpacker. There's the Sutton family. There's the family with six kids that did the AT. Crawford family. Yeah. They were a couple years before us. No, I mean, we're certainly not
we're not that special.
No, we're not too special. There's a lot of other
but it's really fun because it is unusual, and so it's fun to get to know some of these other families, because sometimes you feel like you're abnormal and then you're like, oh, we're not that abnormal.
But I mean, everybody's different, and some hikers dig it. I mean, there was a nanny on the CDT who really worked hard to kind of meet up with us on trail. Grit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There was a girl that we hiked with all of Vermont on the AT, and then actually later we got her to drop out of college for a semester and come out to Africa to help watch our kids while we were in the hospital in Africa. Blizzard is a guy from Texas that we probably hiked more than 300 miles on the CDT with.
Yeah. But, you know, some people are drawn to kids and some people aren't, because they're loud. Yeah. They're not going to be quiet and let you listen to your podcast or whatever. Right, you know, no, they're going to be
in your face.
Yeah, I might have a problem with kids that won't let you listen to a podcast. Well, I know. If it's right? My podcast, they won't let you listen to.
I know. I mean, yours, of course.
Right. But there's exceptions. That one you put on
I don't care if it's somebody else's.
But no, the kids are definitely loud. I mean, wherever, we don't sneak up on anybody or any wildlife.
Which is why we weren't afraid of grizzlies on the CDT, because...
Well, we
kids made enough noise.
Spray. We did responsible things.
We were responsible.
We had our
but
canisters. And
we also weren't going to run into them.
Yeah. Yeah. Any grizzly could hear us coming a mile away. Probably smell us 2 miles away.
Yeah, I've hiked with large groups of kids. I was a volunteer with the Boy Scouts, and... we took a group of kids 2 years in a row. We, over a 2-year period, we hiked from the Delaware Water Gap to Route 17C in New York State. And then another trip got to Bear Mountain. Yeah. And at one point, one of the adults said, you know, what about bears? I said, you've got a group of 14 to 16 year old boys here. There's no bears are going to come around here. Believe me, they're making enough noise. Nothing's coming around here.
And no bear has ever attacked a group that big.
Right. They were rowdy enough that we didn't need bear bells. We didn't need horns or anything.
Yeah.
We thought about hiring, like loaning our kids out just because they're loud and they don't like you to be lonely and all that. Oh, yeah. So we're like, you can borrow our kids for a day if you want.
Yeah.
Hey, just tell them it's a new trend in ultralight backpacking. You don't need bear spray. Just borrow a kid.
Bring two extra meals for them. And
they can carry their own now. They're fine.
That's true.
So a lot of people quit the AT or quit whatever through hike because they just get lonely and bored. And we never got that chance to kind of get lost in our own thoughts because there was just always, especially Angel Wings. If she's awake, she's talking. Her mouth is going. So we never really got that chance to get bored or lonely or stuck in our own thoughts or anything of the sort. We were always just focused on the kids and keeping them engaged and happy and taken care of.
Somebody posted on Instagram this year and they were like talking about their zero day and they were enjoying a nice like coffee and like, oh, waiting for the laundry and all this, like whatever normally a zero involves.
Zero days are the worst.
And we're just like, I was like, look at this zero day. So, and for us, it's just something completely different.
On a through hike, our kids are like so strong. Like they can go so far, so fast all day long. And then on a zero, they have all that energy still that has to be burned up. The zeros are the worst. And then you have to go hiking for seven people.
So I mean,
food shopping for seven people, do laundry for seven people.
On a zero, I'm usually like going in, you know, buying all the groceries. And then you have to like take apart all, like it's a lot of food. So you have to take apart all the boxes and make sure it's not strewn all over the place so that the people don't hate you. So they don't hate through hikers. And then the kids, meanwhile, are just like jumping off the walls and. Then you throw the baby in it and she's screaming probably if you're not paying attention.
She's not screaming. She's happy. She's cooing.
Totally. it's definitely not relaxing.
Yeah, that's what I think about with the food is I know what it's like just for myself or if I'm with one other adult, right? You've got this whole routine, right? You go into town and you sort out your food, you pack it into your bear canister or your bear bag, however you're taking care of your food. But it's a whole different world out there when you bring in kids with you, right? And then, you know, you've got that on top of having to do laundry. And then you've got young kids that need to be entertained.
Yeah. And then it's our one crack at hygiene.
And then it's like 11 p.m. and we're like, okay, finally, or 10 p.m. And we're finally like, I'm like, oh, I got to put an Instagram post up. And
no,
then
you don't.
It doesn't happen. So.
Oh, the suffering. That's some first world problems right there.
I know. Anyways, hence I failed at it.
Danae and Owen, do you guys have any future plans? Any future big trips or through hikes planned?
We gotta make money. And so we homeschooled. The kids do great at homeschooling. So they homeschooled really far ahead. But now we've been hiking so much, they've kind of dropped back to either where they should be or back maybe even a little bit behind. So you have to kind of catch up on some homeschooling. And yeah, we can only live off our love for so long. Eventually, we'll have to get a job to feed these. The kids insist on eating every day. So we'll have to get, I don't know. We have to get employed. And
so we took for the Appalachian Trail, we took a sabbatical. So that was unpaid leave. And then when we did the Continental Divide Trail, we were still working. But we took
another
unpaid leave. It was like, 9 months off we took then?
I don't know, probably.
And then we quit in May, so we became unemployed in May, and now we're like, okay,
yeah,
we got to get jobs.
You got to go back to the real world, and you know,
I know
that horrible really, R world, responsible.
We're not transitioning very well. We're trying to make decisions and
trying to come up with new adventures and new travels.
I literally just went to Africa for another month, just to help out at the hospital there, and I just got back, like. 4 days ago. And so now we have to grow up and make some decisions, but we don't have any hiking plans. We have like a list of like 20 things, like what could we do in this transition before we get tied down to a house and work and all that.
Once you get a job and a house and a dog and a car and whatever else, then you're kind of stuck.
It's really hard to take time off to do big hiking trips for people. I know they, you know, it's hard for people.
We are so fortunate that had this life. You know, we spent 12 and a half years in Chad, Africa, and we were church employees for our church. And the job we had, nobody wanted the job, so there wasn't a lot of competition. So when we said, you know, can we take all this time off? They said, okay. And we said, you know, you don't have to pay us. And they said, oh, I'll take all the time you want. We're just so lucky to be able to do that.
We just had to make sure we had coverage to cover the hospital.
Right. To be responsible, we wanted to make sure there were other doctors in the hospital that could treat the patient still.
But to answer your question, no, we really have no idea what we're doing.
No, we don't know where we're going to live.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's good.
6 months ago, somebody asked us this question. We were like, oh, we'll for sure know by the end of our hike. And no, we still don't know.
Yeah.
Talk about buying a bus, living in a bus, or living in a boat.
He wants to learn how to sail and sail the world. But
yeah.
Well, maybe next time we have you on, it'll be to talk about a sailing expedition.
That'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, am I putting ideas in his head? Is this going to be it?
No, it's already there.
Those seeds are well German.
Okay, because I'm wondering, is Danae now done with me? No, we're not going to talk to him ever again. He's putting bad ideas in his head.
No, we just need to figure it out, make some decisions. But
Danae and Olin, where can we find you if we want to follow you or see some photos from your adventures?
Danae's Instagram is the best.
I'm still really behind on our hike. I'm still in the Sierra, which is in August.
Well, if you can figure out how to spell the last name is Nettaburg. It's Nettaburg. There are so few of us in the world that if you look on Facebook or Instagram or anywhere, you'll probably find us.
But I think, like many through hikers, it's healing also to post your pictures late. At least that's what I'm telling myself.
Yeah.
Because it helps you kind of process the hike. So I'm still processing the hike.
Yeah, go with
it. I'll be processing for another 3 months, probably.
Go with it.
Before we close here, I'm totally with you on that because it helps you relive some great memories.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does.
I think so.
Yeah.
Especially if you did it with somebody special and in your case, with your entire family. So yes, I agree with you on that. Absolutely. Well, Olin Danae Nettaburg, thank you so much for coming on here and sharing this with us. Yeah, I wish we could probably talk for hours, but you guys are great. A lot of fun. Thanks for sharing.
We're
all
free
this
next
us.
Week if you want to have us back again.
Hey, you never know. There's a strong possibility you're going to hear from me again, okay? All right, gang. Thanks so much for being generous enough to come on here and share your story with us.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks for listening. If you haven't done so yet, go to our website, papabearhikes.com. Listen to past episodes. Check us out on social media. Go to our YouTube channel, Martin Outside. All those links are there. In addition to that, you can buy our book or see what you're missing out on if you're not a Patreon member yet. Remember to get outside, have fun, and be safe. This episode of Papa Bear Hikes has been brought to you by Avalon Publicity. Avalon Publicity, increasing the digital footprint of content creators and skilled professionals via website development and social media services. For more information about Avalon Publicity, go to their website, avalonbusiness.org. That's avalonbusiness.org.